This is episode number 761 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in What's New, we're going to talk about the upcoming Batman movie. Our comics this week will be Spider-Woman number 12, Commandy Challenge number 1, and Slayer Repentless number 1. This week's Out of the Long Box will be Commandy number 29.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you.
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
God, clean the whole fun.
And welcome, everybody, to Secret Identity. This is Brian Latenry here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
Doing well, and to think that I'm going to be talking about a new Commandy book in our new
books. I saw the books for this week, and I knew you were excited to get into this.
Very excited.
But let's start with Batman, if you will.
Yes.
Ben Affleck has decided, Matthew, to step down as the director of The Batman and remain on as producer and star of the project. Affleck is still on board to play the superhero, but sources close to the talent say that Affleck and Warner Brothers, after discussing how to best make the film possible, came to the decision together. There are certain characters who hold a special place in the hearts of millions, Affleck said in a statement. Performing this role demands focus, passion, and the very best performance I can give. It has become clear that I cannot do both jobs to the level they require. Together with the studio, I have decided to find a partner and a director who will collaborate with me on this massive film. I am still in this and we are making it, but we are currently looking for a director. I remain extremely committed to this project and look forward to bringing this to life for fans around the world. Sources say this decision was solely made based on what's best for the project and had nothing to do with the recent disappointment of Affleck's recent directing job, Live by Night. Affleck and Warner Brothers will now begin searching for a new director. Sources say there is a short list and that War for the Planet of the Apes helmer Matt Reeves is among those on that list. Warner Brothers fully supports Ben Affleck's decision and remains committed to working with him to bring a standalone Batman picture to life, the studio said in a statement. Affleck has completed work as the Caped Crusader in Justice League, which opens November 17th, and he was preparing to go into prep for the solo Batman movie this summer. Affleck co-wrote that script with Jeff Johns. There had been rumblings that Affleck was not considering directing the film during the past month, but in recent weeks, sources say the multi-hyphenate came to the decision it was best to let the directing job go and focus on playing the part. That was from Variety. So I think this is nothing but fantastic news for the Batman movie.
I think so.
Because I think having Ben Affleck direct the Batman movie would have been an unmitigated disaster.
I do. Look at what happened with the new movie. I mean, that thing was hyped for a couple months and then in the theater for about 20 minutes and then gone. And
well, to be fair, that was kind of – it was a period piece, right?
It was post-World War One gangster –
and off looked, of a best-selling book, yes. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. And it looked like it – I mean, it didn't look terrible, but I don't know. I mean, I can't say much about him because as far as anything other than the acting, because I thought Argo, him in it, him directing it, him producing it, him screenplaying it, everything he did in that was fantastic.
I think – again, we don't know because we're not behind the scenes here, but I feel like he came into the role of Batman and impressed them so much that their response was, give this guy everything.
Yeah, give him what he wants.
Yeah, give him everything.
Yeah.
Like, he gets it. He gets Batman. This is the Batman we want. We're going to build everything around this character and this guy playing this character. Make it happen, whatever we need to do. And then after Justice League came out, which was certainly a financial success, if not a critical success, and they now have had time to tweak things a little bit and think about what the roadmap looks like mm-hmm. for the DC movies and stuff like that. I mean, you got to think they just took a step back and said, do we really want him directing this movie in addition to starring in it? We kind of need to get this right.
Mm.
Like, the Batman movies are movies that have a certain pedigree.
And they should be slam dunks.
Exactly right. They should be slam dunks. And you don't have to look any farther than the mediocre success of the last couple Spider-Man movies to know that when you don't have a slam dunk with your flagship character, something is horribly wrong.
Yes.
And it was wrong enough for Marvel to end up partnering with Sony in something we never thought was going to happen to basically say, we have to get this right. It's freaking Spider-Man. Now, again, we'll see when Homecoming comes out this summer if they got it right or not. But certainly his appearance in Civil War indicated to me that they are on the right track with that. So I liked Ben Affleck's Batman.
I thought he did great.
He is a big, brutal Batman. But I don't think he's got any business directing the Batman movie.
No, let him. Yeah, because, I mean, it definitely is a niche thing. And, you know, you mentioned the guy doing War on the Planet of the Apes as one of the possible choices. Obviously, those movies know what they're doing as far as action goes. So just let somebody look at those movies,
right? So you have movies where there is a humongous portion of those productions that are CG,
mm-hmm.
right? So you're used to dealing with a lot of CG and a lot of motion capture and a lot of green screen and a lot of that kind of. So you're bringing in, if it is this guy,
yeah.
and this was last week's story, they might have actually hired this guy by now. But if it is him, then you definitely are bringing in somebody who has had the ability to work on a property that's pretty beloved.
Yes.
Maybe not to the level of a Batman, but certainly to a lot of fans around the world. One of them I'm sitting across from.
Yes.
In terms of Planet of the Apes. And so, and has done an all right job with that stuff. So, yeah. So whoever they bring in, hopefully it will be the right person mm-hmm. for that project. And they can't screw that up.
Nope.
Because there's even more pressure on the Batman movie after Justice League.
Yes.
Right? So if we assume that Justice League. Now, when is Wonder Woman coming out?
That is, I thought it was November, but it can't be because that's when Justice League
is November.
So it's got to be summer then.
So it's got to be this summer, right? So it'll be Wonder Woman first, and then it'll be Justice League, and then following that, we'll see Batman. And maybe Aquaman?
Could that be what's up next after that?
So, I mean, if the Justice League movie kills, which you know financially it's going to kill.
Yes.
But if the Justice League movie is everything that we want it to be, that puts a huge amount of pressure now on the standalone Batman film.
Mm-hmm.
So things are going to get real interesting over the next year for the DC cinematic universe.
Yes.
Going to be exciting.
Going to be good.
I think ultimately this will be better for the project, and the Batman movie will be better off for having Affleck focus on playing Batman.
Just play Batman.
Not worry about directing the movie.
Yep.
I think it'll be better off.
Think so.
All right. So that was my big news story for this week. So let us jump into comic books. And because you are doing the Out of the Long Box, I am going to start off with comics for this week. And I'm going to start off with number one of a new story arc in Spider-Woman. Of course, it's number 13 of Spider-Woman. This is Marvel's new thing that they now do. The big number one over in the corner.
And the itty-bitty number on the bottom.
And down at the bottom, oh, it's actually not number one. It's number 13. I do like the idea of them noting when a new story arc is going mm-hmm. to start. The whole number one thing, I mean, if you fall for it, I don't know what to tell you,
yeah.
but it is kind of shady. That has nothing to do with the fact that Spider-Woman is one of the best books going right now.
Good.
Definitely, I'm trying to think of what books at Marvel I like better than Spider-Woman right now. And maybe it's just Amazing Spider-Man. Like, that's how good this book is. It is freaking awesome. And in this book, you have Dennis Hopeless, who is writing it, Veronica Fish, who is the artist, and Rochelle Rosenberg, who does the colors on this one. And I will tell you that Veronica Fish killed it in this issue. Absolutely killed. Have you been reading this book?
I was flipping through it because I saw the number one and was like, oh.
So what you have going on is that Jessica has a baby now. Roger, who was the Porcupine, a D-list villain, is like she's basically rehabilitated this guy. So this guy now is her almost like sidekick. She's also working with Ben Urich. So you got Ben Urich, who is researching these cases that nobody else cares about that they're going to go and deal with. You have Roger, who she's trained to be a pretty capable hero now and a real redemption story. And then you have Jess, who is kind of dealing with being a mom now and also being a crime fighter now and trying to stay true to the notion that she wanted to do more street level stuff and not really getting involved in the big Avengers stuff or anything else like that right now. But this book, from the tone of it to the humor of it to the artwork consistently through, this book has been absolutely fantastic, and this issue is not any exception to that. So we start off, and you have Jess, who is talking about how she does it. She's saying, you know, people are asking me all the time, how do I do it? How do I juggle, you know, being a mom and dealing with the crime fighting and dealing with all the big picture stuff without losing my mind? And she is basically saying, you know, I have all these different things that I'm juggling, but the way that I do it is whatever the task is in front of me at that point in time, in my mind, it is the only task. So if I'm being a mom right now, then I am 150% being a mom. If I'm chasing a bad guy right now, I cannot think about any of that other stuff. I have to just be 150% into stopping this guy that I'm chasing right now. And she's kind of saying that, you know, one of the reasons I can do that is because I have some pretty great people in my life. I have Ben and I have Roger. And between the two of them, they really help me out so that I don't have to be constantly second guessing myself while I'm out there. And the guy that she's chasing is sort of a D-list Iceman knockoff called the Blizzard, I believe. And she's chasing this guy through town. And I got to tell you, Veronica Fish just destroyed this. I mean, just awesome. So you got Jess who's chasing him, and she gets him in an alleyway, and the guy's like all upset at her now and says, you know what, lady? And she says, I don't know. What are you going to tell me? This was a smash and grab night. I wasn't planning on hurting anybody, but if it's a tussle with the Blizzard you want. And there's the best look that Veronica Fish drew. And she says, want is a strong word. It's just awesome. You have to read this book. And he says, feel the frost. And he kind of blasts her. And I have to tell you, the combination of the writing, the artwork, the tone, the colors, everything, it is just perfect. It plays off with exactly the humor that you want. So he blasts her. And she's like, yeah, that's really cold. But you see, I've got this thick superhero skin. So thumpity thump thump. And she beats the crap out of him. And then the next thing you know, she comes waltzing into her apartment. And Ben is there. And she smacks the door open and she goes pounding down the hallway and she's dripping wet because she's freezing. So she goes to take a hot shower and she's like, where's Roger? And Ben's like, oh, he just had to run out. But, you know, if you see him, I know he was the one that was supposed to be babysitting. Don't say that you saw me here because he'll be really upset if he let you down. Roger's very concerned about not wanting to let you down. Because he is, because we know as readers that Roger has completely fallen in love with Jess and he only wants her to think great things about him. And so the fact that he wasn't there when she came home would absolutely just drive him crazy. So she's like, okay, that's a little bit weird, but no big deal. So now we go to see what Roger was actually doing. And you see that he's showing up at a place that's the equivalent of the bar with no name. And he walks in and there's a bunch of villains in there. And he says, hey guys, is the boss around? So now we're wondering, Jesus, Roger going back to being a bad guy now? Who's to say? So then you have Jess who goes to Moon's Hollow, New York, which was, if you remember at the very beginning of these story arcs with this creative team, there was a situation where a lot of the D-list Marvel villains, their wives and girlfriends left them. And they basically went and created their own town.
It was like a shanty town kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, and then now it's a full-blown town where they are having festivals and everything, and the town is basically up and running on its own. And so Jess goes there to periodically visit. And when she goes there, she runs into all of the women that she initially was going to have to fight, but has become great friends with since. And they're talking about how good the town's doing and how, you know, everybody's successful and everything's going really well and everybody's happy to see her. And she runs into Roger's daughter and his ex. And the ex is really kind of cold to her. And the daughter's name is Kaylee, and she's Olivia, I think, is the mom's name. She kind of gives Jess the cold shoulder and Jess is like, what's up with that? And they're like, oh, it has nothing to do with you. You know, their relationship is always super complicated, but it looks like something new has upset this woman. And so now you see Ben and Roger out on patrol that night, and Ben is trying to have a conversation with Roger where he's saying, look, here's what you have to think about. I know that you are completely in love with Jess, but you cannot tell her that right now. Because if you tell her that, it's going to overly complicate everything. She's got so much going on. This would just ruin everything. And Roger's like, I know. I can't tell her. I just have to be the nanny. I just have to be the sidekick. I cannot, you know, profess my feelings to her. And he's kind of accepting it. And it's kind of a sad moment because he's realizing that A, he doesn't think there's any way that she would go for him anyways, but also he's struggling with the fact that he knows that Ben's right. Now is not the time for him to be throwing this into their relationship, that he's madly in love with her. And so they're having this conversation, and he says to Ben, look, I know you wanted to follow me out here tonight, but I need you to go hide over there. No matter what happens, don't come out. And so now we're kind of wondering what's going on with Roger. And you see that what's going on with Roger is you have all these villains coming in on goblin gliders. You see Firefly, you see who else is there? Is that Paste Pot Pete? I don't know. But they all come in there and they all are beating the crap out of him. And they're saying, oh, you thought you could just get out of the business and nothing bad would happen. You know, you're a filthy traitor. We've seen that you've been, you know, palling around with the good guys and stuff like that. And they beat the living daylights out of him. And Ben is kind of freaking out while he's still in hiding. And who ends up showing up but the Hobgoblin? And the Hobgoblin says, we had a contract and nobody breaks a contract with the Hobgoblin. And he is basically saying to Roger, who is just absolutely beaten, you know, half to death, Roger's saying, look, you lied to me. You didn't hold up your end of the bargain. And Hobgoblin says, you know, we kind of lied to each other. And you don't know what the contract was. But he ends up beating up Roger some more. And he says, look, I'm exercising my exit clause. He says, no hard feelings. And he ties Roger up and he sits him on the edge of the rooftop of this building and he puts a pumpkin bomb in his lap. And then he goes away. And 2 seconds later, it explodes. And Ben gets out of his hiding spot, and all you see is a crater left on the top of the rooftop where Roger used to be. And so next thing we cut to Jess back in her apartment, and she's with the baby and reading a bedtime story. And who comes knocking at the door but Ben, and he's like shaking like a leaf. And he can't even say it. And she's like, what's going on? And he says, I couldn't even say it over the phone. And she's like, what are you talking about? What happened? Where's Roger? And that's the way that this issue ends. So many feelings about this issue. First of all, I will say it again. This is one of the best books that is out there right now. Spider-Woman, just absolutely amazing, top to bottom. The creative team is just totally killing it. Again, you've got Dennis Hopeless is writing it, Veronica Fish on art, Rochelle Rosenberg on colors, and the editor here is Travis Lanham Letters. Devin Lewis is the editor. It's killer, man. This book is amazing. I hope that Roger's not dead. What amazes me even more is that they created a character in Roger that I completely care about now. It was like devastated when that happened in the book. I'm like, that did not just happen to Roger. So if you have not been reading Spider-Woman, you might get lucky here. Hold on a second. Hold on a second.
There you go.
Assuming I don't, it feels like it might not work. It's not working. This could be a disappointing moment.
And it's cold, so it should just be peeling right off.
It should be, but it isn't. No. Oh. Code ruined. Sorry. You're going to have to pay for this one yourselves. It is a $3.99 book. It is number 13. It says big number one in the corner of a new story arc. I will tell you right now, you should pick this up, even if you haven't been reading Spider-Woman. But you should also go back and pick up the other issues of Spider-Woman because it is an amazing series and you should totally be reading it.
So speaking of buying a book, our good buddy Daryl tweeted today because I guess he went to the store and I think the new X-Men, one of the X-Men books is out, like X-Men Gold or Red.
Yes,
or
yeah, blue. Yeah. And all new X-Men, right?
Yeah, something like and that. And his tweet was, what? $5.99 for an X-Men book? Wow. And
only 32 pages.
Yeah. That's pretty sad.
That's I saw the same thing he posted on Facebook. 32 pages.
Yeah.
$5.98. And we talked about that. I mean, it's funny because I was just professing my love for this Marvel book over here. But when we were talking about when you were reading Captain America before, I'm not super loving where Marvel's at right now.
No. Monsters Unleashed came out a couple weeks ago.
I didn't buy any of it.
I saw the first issue. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. $5.99 or $4.99?
Seriously, dude,
it.
For me, it is literally like the Spider Family and Miss Marvel.
Captain America, Daredevil, and
that's what I got going on right
Rocket
now.
Raccoon, that's
Marvel.
It. Yep.
I also heard, though, that DC's monthly books are going back up to $3.99.
Ewe.
And that is a mistake.
Yep.
Because now that will be, even though I understand that the ones that are coming out twice a month, you're still paying more money because you're paying $3 twice a month. I understand that.
Yep.
But the $2.99 thing is something that DC should stick to.
They should.
It is working for them. it seems to be working for them from a sales standpoint. They should stick to that. But yeah, this $4.99, $5.99 crap is out of control.
Yeah. Yep. So let's talk about a book that is not out of control, and that is The Commandy Challenge. It is $4.99, but it is a little bit of a thick book.
Uh-huh.
And to premise what this is, interesting, about maybe 30 years ago, I had an idea where I was wondering if, like, with the team-up books, like with DC Comics Presents, Brave and the Bold, Marvel Team-Up, Marvel 2-in-1, all these team-up books, I always used to want a creator to do one book, like have a writer write a book, and then at the end of it, he is done, and he writes something where he throws a new the guest star of the next issue in it,
uh-huh.
and then they have to pick it up. So it's almost like, all right, we're going to write it, and then you've got to write the next part of it. Sort of like what the Commandy Challenge is. And what the Commandy Challenge is Commandy the character has a 6-page story. And this one is started by Dan DiDio with art by Keith Giffen. And he tells a 7, 8, 9-page story. And then when the story is done, the next creative team have to pick it up exactly where he left it. And they've got to tell their story. And then at the end of the book, Dan DiDio says, wow, I really loved what they did with it, but this is what I was thinking the ending would have been. If I wrote all the whole book, this is what I would have done from beginning to end.
Uh-huh.
So you're getting like this really cool behind the scenes look at what's going on. You're also getting some amazing creative teams. Jimmy Palmiotti will be, and Amanda Connor, I believe, are doing a segment in here as well. So
Commandy- it's funny that you mentioned that, dude, because I honestly, had an idea for a fiction project where you would take a story and you would basically, it would like a horror story,
yep.
and you would write 3/4 of it. And then every person that was part of the anthology wrote a different ending.
Yeah.
You said, this is the setup. This is what's happening. And then right at a crucial moment in the story, you say, okay, so this is what Matt thinks the end of that story is. And you just write your end of the story.
It's a great idea.
And then you let the reader basically pick for themselves, like which one was the one that they liked the best.
Yeah. So we start out not quite tomorrow. And you've got this young boy who's in bed and, you know, you're hearing, hey, the bus is coming. So you see this kid get dressed and he's like, oh my gosh, I missed the bus. And he runs outside and he forgets a couple of his books. But as he's running, he's trying to run to school. He's running through town. He runs into a guy that looks like Jack Kirby. And also, too, this is celebrating the 100-year what would have been Jack Kirby's 100th birthday.
Uh-huh.
The Monsters Unleashed had this little logo on it. This one has it with Jack the King in there. And as he's going through, he's being stopped by the police. And they're like, so what are you doing? He's like, well, I'm late to school. I got to run through here. And they're like, well, you can't go that way. This is for your own safety. You've got to go in a different direction. And he's like, I don't understand what's going on. And then all of a sudden behind him, the buildings blow up. And he looks over. And you've got like the ship coming down with aliens, which he thinks they're aliens, just shooting everybody. So all the humans that are there start pulling out guns and start shooting. He starts running. He can't figure out what's going on. And then you find out that they're not aliens that are coming out of the ship. They're rats. And they're rats that are talking to him. And I forgot what issue that the rats were first introduced in Commandy. But you see that these rats are coming through. They're grabbing people as one of them. They shoot one of the humans and the human's face melts and you see that it's a robot. So Commandy's like, I don't even know what this is. I don't know what's happening. Everybody's gone. I don't know what this is. And he runs home to his grandmother and his grandmother is telling him, you know, oh, don't worry about it. You know, it's just fine. Just go wash up and, you know, we'll have dinner. And then a void opens up or like a vortex opens up in the house. And all of a sudden these robots start coming through there. It blows up. And as Commandy is there, kind of laying there dazed, he's getting these thoughts of God Watcher, Bay of Bones, Save the World, Snow Wizard, Remember Commando, or Remember Commandy, Find Your Parents. And then he's like, oh, no. And he starts to wake up, and there is a tiger that is grabbing him, waking him up, saying, Commandy, is it? Well, I got a job for you. And he picks him up, and he throws him in a cage, and then throws him out into a battle pit where he is fighting this huge gorilla that has it, within the two eyes, there's like other eyes on top of the eyes. It's really weird looking. And that is where that story ends. And now that was the Dan DiDio, Keith Giffen story. And then they hand it off to Dan Abnett and Dale Eaglesham.
Yep.
Say, all right, continue the story.
Pretty talented team.
Yes. So now all you have Commandy fighting the big thing. All the people, all the lions and tigers that are up in the top are screaming, kill, kill, kill. And he punches one of the eyes. The thing lets him go. And they're all looking, going, wait a minute. That's kind of odd that savage was able to – it's like he knew what he was doing when he punched him in the eye. And then he goes down. He falls on the ground. And all these creatures, all the cat creatures are watching him going, he seems to be fighting with intelligence, not just out of savage desperation. He starts to run towards what he sees as an electric fence. And as soon as he jumps out of the way, this big gorilla thing gets a hold of it, gets electrocuted and passes out. And that's when the king is going, yeah, this is way more than coincidental. He knows what he's doing. So they throw him in a cage and they bring him to, one of the scientists who is a dog, Dr. Canis. And Dr. Canis is there. Well, you know what? I'm going to analyze him. I'll see what's going on. And Dr. Canis right away realizes that there is something more to him than just being some savage human running around. And he's saying, well, here's what you're going to have to do. I know that you're intelligent. I see it. I can sense it. These aren't mimic patterns that you picked up. This is what you do. So what you have to do is act like a savage. You just need to pretend that this is, that you are, you're not very bright, or they will rip you apart. They'll dissect you. You're going to be a threat. So he puts a leash on him, starts walking him around town. He's kind of pointing things out to him. And then the army comes walking back in after a big battle. And it is Caesar, who is the general. He's a big lion. And he comes in on a tank, and he is bringing the spoils of war, which are all these weapons and all these trophies and now all these slaves that are coming in. And Commandy's kind of freaking out about the whole thing. He's like, wait a minute, that's a nuke. That's an atomic warhead. This is going to kill everybody. And then Dr. Canis is like, oh, you know what? Don't worry about it. It's a cool tool of the gods. So he bolts. He runs away. And as he runs into a building, which is a warehouse, which is stockpiling weapons. But you've got a B-17 bomber. You've got a bunch of nuclear missiles, some jeeps, some tanks, a couple of fighter planes. And then up in there protecting it is a thing called the Jackdaw. And it's like a flying thing, but it's kind of scary looking. It looks like something that you would draw to protect a, sort of like a temple or something. And he starts fighting that. And those are what are floating around in this area to protect it. And as he fights with them, Dr. Canis comes out, grabs them. And then he brings them to the prince. And as they go outside, they see that they are having a huge worship ceremony for this big missile that they brought, much like in Beneath the Planet of the Apes. And as they're looking at it, they hit it and they start something and all of it, they hit a button and all of a sudden it activates the bomb. And you see that it is now on a countdown. And then Commandy's like, oh, that thing's counting down to blow up. It's going to kill all of us, every little thing. And then you see what happens at the end. What's going to go on? Who's the next creative team that's going to have to write this one? And you see that the next team is going to be Peter Tomasi and Neil Adams. So they're the team that have to pick up the story from them arming the nuclear weapon. And what I thought was really cool about
that. How many issues is this?
It's going to be a 12-issue series.
Whoa.
So you're going to get 24 8-9-page stories from different creators telling this story. But what I thought was really kind of funny about it, and didn't get it until the end, where you're seeing it and you're like, oh, wow, there's the weapon. They're worshiping the weapon. And then you turn the page and you're like, well, why did he hit the button to start the countdown to blow the button up? But what they're trying to do is trip up the creative team to make them really write something special from that one thing. So a great book, a great series. This is something that I've been looking forward to for a few months. And if you didn't get it, if you're not interested in all in the character, be interested in the process, because as a writer and somebody that loves the visual medium, I'm fascinated by this. Because in my head, I'm thinking, all right, how would I write this?
What's the comic equivalent of improv?
Yes. What would I do? You've just handed me characters that are going to blow up the earth.
Sure.
How am I going to write out of that one?
Well, I'm going to finish up my books today, Matthew, by going over to Dark Horse and talking about Slayer, Repentless, number one. Now, this is the comic that is based on the story that was being told in the videos for Slayer, the heavy metal band.
Yes. Oh, I forgot about
most
that.
Most recent album. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But it is written by John Schnepp. The art is by Guillou Villanova. Covers by Glenn Fabry. Now, the story is based on the music videos that were written and directed by BJ McDonald, who is the director of Hatchet 3. And so Schnepp is involved with Metalocalypse, the Venture Brothers, the Death of Superman, Lives, and that kind of stuff. And so they both have a lot of experience in the Hollywood realm. Now, the videos for Slayer's album, one of the producers on them was Felissa Rose. And when we were at Rock and Shock, and you might know Felissa Rose from Sleepaway Camp.
That's
because
right.
She was
that's
Angela
right.
in the Sleepaway Camp series. So lo and behold, we go to Rock and Shock a couple years ago, and I was with Keith and Amy, who know her. And I end up talking to her not about horror movies for a half hour, but about heavy metal, which was like, it doesn't get any better than that, right? So we're talking about heavy metal, and she's talking about how, because these videos that Slayer put out for this album were involving a lot of well-known horror movie actors. And Felissa was basically talking about how she helped get those actors involved with the videos and stuff like that. But in any case, they featured a guy with an eye patch who, in the first video off the album, you saw like a prison riot, and he basically fought his way through everybody in the prison to basically take down all of his enemies. And so they created this character that was through these videos, and now the comic book is kind of telling the story of that character. And it is a grim and gory story indeed. So as we start off, what you see is that there are two teenage brothers, Adrian and Wyatt, whose family were murdered. They are sent to stay with relatives, and the relatives that they are sent to stay with are white supremacists. And so these two brothers are brought up basically as modern-day Nazis. Mm. And so they are, at first, both sort of loyal to the cause. And you see a scene where there's riots going on, and they're in the middle of it just, hurting as many people who look different than them as they possibly can. And in one particular fight, Wyatt loses an eye to a broken bottle. And you see that over this montage of their history, you are seeing this conversation that's happening between the two brothers. And you have Adrian, who is talking to his brother Wyatt about how he is a traitor and he left the brotherhood and he turned his back on his family and all this kind of stuff. And Wyatt, who's the one that lost an eye, is basically saying, yeah, when that happened to me, I kind of took a step back and realized that everything that we had learned and had become a part of was completely wrong. And so he walked away from all of that. Well, he moved to this little middle of nowhere place called Repentless, which is this little nowhere town. But he meets a young woman named Angel, and they fall in love. Angel happens to be African-American. And so later on down the road, the Brotherhood comes looking for him, and they kidnap her. And that is basically the beginning of the story of him going after revenge. They basically come to this little town. They kill a bunch of people. They take her. He ends up getting taken down by some basically cops that are on the take of the Brotherhood, and gets thrown in jail with a bunch of people who are only going to kill him. So as he's getting brought in, they're all saying, hey, what's up, dead man? Because they all work for the Brotherhood. And so you see in a scene that is almost directly out of the video from the thing, the prison riot, where he ends up taking out all of these guys that came to kill him. And he thinks that he's going to escape this prison, but he ends up getting knocked on the back of the head by one of the prison guards. And they take him from the prison, and they take him to this house in the middle of nowhere where the Brotherhood is working out of. And they bring him down to the basement, and they basically have him take a knife and tell him to kill a cellmate of his who is Hispanic, to basically prove his loyalty and come back to the Brotherhood. And he refuses to do that. And then they reveal that they have his girlfriend there, and they kill her right in front of him. And so he freaks out and kills everybody but his cellmate. And the two of them leave, and they decide that they are going to wage war on the Brotherhood at this point. The first thing that they decide to do is they're going to bring her body back to her hometown so that she can have a proper burial, and then he's going to go take care of business. And so that sort of sets the path, and then we get introduced halfway through to his brother, who has now risen to a place of pretty lofty power within the organization of this Brotherhood, and he is now aware that his brother's out on the run and there's going to be a showdown between the two of them. And so that's kind of the premise of this book. And there is a lot of blood and mayhem along the way. It actually overall is a good sort of revenge story. Where they kind of lose it a little bit is they get to a part in the story where Slayer makes an appearance as a biker gang in a bar along the way. And there's a lot of references to lyrics from the songs that feel a little bit forced. But outside of that, that kind of cheesiness factor, the rest of it is a very grim and gritty sort of revenge tale about a guy who was not a nice person, ended up changing his life around, and his past came back to haunt him and everybody who he'd ever gotten close with. And so now he is realizing that the only thing he can do now is go out and get revenge on the people that have basically taken the woman that he loves from him. So, interesting story. I find it more interesting that they actually created a character through the videos of this album that now has his own storyline that is running through these comic books. And it just gives another sort of layer to the album. And it's, I'm surprised more so that we don't see kind of more of this stuff happen with, you know, metal bands and just music in general, the, you know, these sort of tie-in things. But I think that it actually makes for a pretty decent story, but it's dark and it's not for the faint of heart and it's gory and it's gritty, but it's, I think, pretty well done. And I think it's a 3-issue series overall. I will be checking out the other two to see where this goes. And now it makes me want to go back and watch the videos so I can see what pieces of the story were told through the videos as well.
I'm going to have to check it out. I was thinking about getting it because I kept seeing it in Blabbermouth.
And
Blabbermouth was talking a lot about it. And again, you know, I'm not a Slayer fan by any stretch. They were they were probably the worst band I've ever seen live. Just from my point of view, I mean, they are amazing. They kick it up. What they do very well. It's just not my taste.
You're not into the thing that they do.
No, I am. Right. They're way too extreme for me.
Right.
But visually, they're a band that lends itself. And it's almost like when you listen to Megadeth's last album, Dystopia, it's like, why is this not a comic book?
Sure.
And when you listen to...
And even one of the videos for Dystopia was an animated video.
Yeah. And the same with Queensryche, their last album. It's like, why is this not a comic book? I mean, all these things lend itself to it. And that's what I love when you've got these weird meldings.
Right. And the funny thing is that Repentless as an album is not a concept album.
No.
But what they did was decided to create this sort of through line through the videos that they were doing for the album and have them feature a particular character. And now that has become a thing that's taken on a life of its own.
Yeah. All right.
Well, there you go. So that's your new comics for this week. But we are now going to do an Out of the Long Box and bring back Commandy because, you know, we talked about before you being a huge Planet of the Apes fan. You were also a humongous Commandy fan. And, and I was thinking, like, obviously Thundar the Barbarian.
Was Jack Kirby was part of Jack Kirby's creations.
Right.
When he was working in animation.
And there's a lot of parallels.
There's a great disaster.
Correct.
Yes.
There's a lot of parallels to Commandy with Thundar the Barbarian.
Like, Jack Kirby, to me, is the greatest creator of all time. And a lot of his stuff, like, he was the type of person that would draw and write things. 80% of them would stick. The other 20%, there's some garbage. I will admit that. There's some really bad stuff. But when he stuck to a concept, it really worked out. And the whole fourth world, I mean, when Commandy was out and Mr. Miracle was out, the Forever People... all that stuff that was happening and Darkseid was in there, it didn't sell. And think about it now. What would DC be without Darkseid in its universe?
I mean,
it is such a major concept. And when Jack Kirby was pumping out these ideas like Commandy and OMAC, it was funny because there was no sense of any continuity anywhere. It's like, well, you know what? In the future, there's a great disaster. Well, how's it playing with the rest of the DC universe? Nah, I don't know.
Right.
Don't care. I don't really care. And as a kid, I didn't care. I just wanted great stories. So with this one, this is going back to 1976 or 1975. It's a 25-cent issue for Commandy number 29. On the cover, you have Commandy fighting a gorilla over a fire pit, and right next to him is the Superman costume hanging there.
Oh.
So for the big thing about this was, what is that happening? What is that doing there? Because now you're saying that ties in. And as a young kid, again, I didn't care. But you're reading this and you've got Commandy and this kid, Ben Boxer, who's sort of he's not necessarily all human. So Commandy could still be the last boy on Earth. You see this gorilla go flying through the air, and they're like, whoa, that's not a bird. It's not a plane, but it's a gorilla. And they're like, yeah, well, we don't know what's going on with that, but let's just start walking a little closer and see where flying gorillas are coming from. And you turn the page, and you have a thing called the Tablet of Revelation, and it is an etching on the wall of the Superman story. And it's you've got a blurry sketching of Superman where you can't even see if his face is human or not. And you've got a city that's collapsing, a planet that is blowing up, Superman that is flying in lightning. Then you see a storm, and then you see him pick up a rock, and then like all the rocks fall on him and kill him. And it's all sort of like in sketching. So Commandy's like, whoa, what is that? And then Ben goes, well, it's a story, but it's kind of written in a comic strip style. So as they're going through there, they come across a group of apes. Now, the interesting thing too with this came out right at the height of Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
So the concepts were all taken. It's basically Planet of the Apes, but Jack Kirby threw in some walking tigers and some rats and every other animal that
could
be
there. But it's no different to me. Like, it's no different than there's a million books with zombies in them
yes.
right now.
Yep.
Like, there's different – in different eras, there are different sort of – sci-fi concepts that are the thing of the day.
Yes.
You know, it's steampunk for a while. It's this for a while. Yep. Now it's zombies is the big thing. Everything has to have zombies in it or some variation or twist on that particular formula.
So Ben shows up. Now, Ben wears this red uniform, and all of a sudden the chieftain of this gorilla tribe is like, the Mighty One's back. This is crazy. They all start bowing him, and then Commandy goes, what's going on? Ben goes, I have no idea. They're just bowing to me. And they said, well, you know what? Don't fight it. This might get us out of here alive. So all of a sudden, this huge gorilla comes out, knocks him down, and his name is Zuma. And they're like, Zuma, don't do that. He's sacred. He goes, he's not the Mighty One. He goes, look what I just did to him. So he starts punching him and beating him up. And then Ben kind of gets his wits and start fighting. But then they get separated. And the chief is like, look, we think you're the Mighty One. Zuma doesn't. So what we have to do is have a trial fight combat. And if you pass all the tests, you are the Mighty One, and you will be able to get the prize. And he's like, all right, well, we'll see what happens. So you see Zuma, they go through this thing, and it's amazing because they walk through, and it's the DC logo that they're walking through.
Oh, nice.
And he's sitting, and they put Zuma on a catapult, and he screams up, up, and away, and they shoot him in the air. So if you survive that, then you are worthy for the next step.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
If you die, you will be reincarnated so you can start it all over again.
Oh.
So Logan's Run.
That's reassuring.
Yes. Either way, you're going to have a chance. So all of a sudden, now Zuma survives. The next battle is they have to take the Daily Planet, which is a big rock, and whoever moves it gets to go to the next level. So Zuma's in there, and he's pushing on it and pushing on it. And it's not going anywhere. And Ben, who does not have any superpowers, gets underneath it. He makes his feet really heavy because he can become kind of metal and dense.
Uh-huh.
Gets underneath it, erodes the ground that it's on, and it rolls towards him, and it looks like he moved it.
Yeah.
So Zuma's like, you know what? That was a trick. That he did a trick. I don't like this. I don't like this at all.
This dude's cheating.
Yeah. So the next test, because it's faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap mighty buildings. Now the faster than a speeding bullet comes up with, you have to stand in front of a target and they Gatling gun you.
Oh.
So nobody survived this one yet. So Zuma's cranking up the thing, shooting up, and Ben gets out of the way. The target gets destroyed. Ben's able to deflect the bullets, but he's kind of knocked down. And he realizes that they say, you know what? You've won all the challenges. You get to go down and you get to claim your prize, the super suit. And you go downstairs, and there is the suit. And there's flames everywhere. And Zuma comes in, goes, it's mine, it's mine. Zuma claims it. He and Commandy start fighting, and then Ben comes in. And when he grabs the like he's standing on the cape, Commandy grabs the cape and flips Zuma into the fire, consuming him and killing him forever. And Commandy was like, oh my gosh, it was horrible. I don't like that. I can't believe I did that. And he's like, well, you know what? You might have been killed, but I'm glad you're not. And he gives the suit back to the chieftain and says, you know what? I don't earn this. I don't deserve this. This is yours. You need to preserve this because I think one day this guy is going to return for this suit. And I want you to hold it. And they walk away, and that's the end of it. So a book that was very simple, a simple story, but as a young kid had such an impact on me.
Oh, that's super cool, especially if you know anything about Superman, right?
Yeah.
You're just seeing.
And this was one of them. And it was funny. I was talking to Vin Ferrante last night on the phone, talking about the Commandy Challenge. And we were talking about this one, and I said, oh, it was issue 33. And he goes, oh, so Jack Kirby didn't write it. And I said, no, Jack Kirby wrote it. We got into this big argument about who was right, who was wrong, because he's like I am. We don't want to have to go look at the books. We want to be able to rely on our own abilities.
Right.
So I will say, because on, like, after issue 33, I don't think Jack was writing them anymore, but he was drawing them. And we were both right because that was what was happening, but this was, I got the numbering wrong. Right. So this was issue 29.
So this particular story was written by him, but not in the issue that you two thought it was.
Yes. Yep. We thought it was later on. I thought the number was later on.
Two old men yelling into the phone.
That's it. And you've got the ads for the Olympic prizes where you sell, seeds from Olympic.
I love it.
Out of Enfield, Connecticut, 06082 zip code.
Mm-hmm. My hometown.
On the other side, you have, you could sell seeds. I don't know where the seeds were from. Oh, Pennsylvania, Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And I always bring this one up, but they used to have on the back the ads and they would have pictures of kids.
Uh-huh.
I used to look all the time going, it's going to be me. And it wasn't me. Thinking that they were just going to find my picture somewhere.
Yeah, they would just find your picture
and
somewhere.
Put me on there. There was a Batman and Robin as they fight the mummy and they give them Hostess Twinkies.
I love – those are my favorite, like the Hostess fruit pies, yep. The Hostess Twinkies, all that stuff.
We are going to blow up and destroy your planet because you've got nothing to offer us. Well,
is there
cupcakes?
Not a coffee table book yet with the Hostess ads in it?
There should be because they covered every company.
Dude,
Archie had them. Archie had them.
No one take that idea. We should get on that.
Yeah. We'll just put it together.
Book with all the Hostess ads in it.
I think so.
Featuring superheroes.
You also had Electro Man, which was, you could be an electrician. I think my dad did this one. I'm not sure which one he did.
Uh-huh.
But my dad did a correspondence course to be an electrician.
I love it.
And yeah, this was a superhero dude named Electro Man. Super Body, be dynamic.
Oh, yeah.
Which was really cool. Never finished high school. Now you can get your diploma without going back. Because back then, apparently everybody, well, not everybody, my mother left school at 16 to get married. And then, I mean, she wasn't pregnant, but she got married. And because that's what people did. Then a couple years later, went back, got her GED. And then a few years after that, became a nurse.
There you go.
So people did stuff like that. You have big superhero stickies, a stamp kit, all sorts of great stuff. Make your first step to a good one with Rider. Become a truck driver.
That was before the New England Tractor Trailer Training School commercials.
Come on to NETS. I always look for friends because every
New
class
England
that graduated.
Tractor Trailer yes. Training School.
And just some great stuff. You had the Tank Trap game and Task Force.
Nice.
All those cool stuff. So great, great, great book. A lot of fun. Commandy is one of the gems of the 70s.
I have not done an Out of the Long Box in a while, so I will do one next time. But there you go. That is your Out of the Long Box for this week. That is going to wrap up this particular episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew Herring, this is Brian Lentenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.